Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Colin Stewart. I'm your co-host. I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron Ross, best-known author. And today, our guest is Ryan O'Hara. He's the VP of Growth and Marketing at LeadIQ. He's also the best around, and nothing's ever going to bring him down.
I love that you referenced the Karate Kid, because it's like my sick movie when I get the flu or a cold. That's what I watch.
Yeah. That's awesome. So we're here to talk about Ryan and I met a couple weeks, actually about a month ago, just before you got married. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
And you mentioned that something that caught my attention, that the worst SDR on your team gets a 21% response rate.
Yeah, I actually feel really bad about, I kind of feel bad about wording it that way, because it focuses on that worst person. In hindsight, I think a better way to spin it, we've got a couple SDRs in our team. We call them BDRs here, but you know, it's interchangeable.
Yeah.
We average around a 30% response rate. So I have one guy on my team that's really good that gets a 42% response rate. I've got another that's in the mid 30s. It averages out to be around 30%. The 21% person's kind of new. They're in month 3 of prospecting here. But I actually sort of intentionally built a team around people that haven't worked in sales before, with the mentality that like they haven't been beaten to death by like a phone book to sell and smile and dial and sell the same way that everyone else does. And it's actually been kind of a really cool experience for us, because like we get to be creative and kind of approach it based on having interesting stories and all that stuff. That's how we should have worded it. But yeah, that's what it is.
That's cool. It's catchier this way and a little pithy, I guess.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. Don't worry. They don't need to hear it.
they're on their way out the door anyway. They'll be gone soon. So what we're going to focus on today is sort of unpacking that and how you get there. You shared some secrets a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago. And so hopefully we can dive a little bit into those and some of the things that you are actually doing today. And I know you've got some slides prepared, so we might do a little mix of screen sharing and sort of talking through. Just keep in mind, our audience is, most of them listen on the podcast, but we also have a YouTube channel that we'll link to in the podcast at the slot there, or in the show notes, so that you can go on YouTube and see Ryan's beautiful face and in his cool mic and the brick background, and of course the slides, if you want to, so you don't need to take so many notes.
Yeah, I highly recommend that anyone that's actually listening and hearing this stuff, if you want to look at some examples of some stuff too that we're doing that don't just show from one company, read our blog, because our blog, we put a ton of stuff out there all the time about different examples of things that work. It's kind of like a prospecting lab environment here at LeadIQ, where we're always trying random experiments sometimes to try and prove and disprove things that work and things that don't work. I'll tell you a little nugget, for example, that I've worked on today. We recently did a study conducting and looking at ending a cold email, and found that the best chance of getting a response rate with a cold email is ending with an open-ended question. And we have a theory on why, but this is an example of like a thing we're working on right now. I think the reason that, like, if you read a lot of sales books and talk to experts, like, oh, be direct and ask for a specific time. We wanted to run that against doing stuff with an open-ended question. And one of the things that we noticed is that you send something that's an open-ended question, even if the person wants to say no to you, they're going to give you an objection you can overturn. It doesn't necessarily mean it converts into a meeting more, but what it does is it gives them a response, and then you have an objection you can overturn and spin. Random nugget. Sure. Sorry. Hopefully that wasn't like, you know...
No, we're going to cut that. Yeah, we're not going to share.
Yeah, please don't tell people good things.
Yeah, that's not what this is about at all. How dare you try and be helpful?
Yeah, damn it. I blew it.
So I think, what if we start at the top here with the your account-based model? Because I know you're a big fan here. And you shared something interesting, that your BDRs are only actually working 40 accounts per?
Yeah,
How does that work?
Yeah, I think it actually originally stemmed off of reading Predictable Revenue and things along those lines as well. But like, we noticed that when we first started prospecting at LeadIQ, we were trying to figure out if we had product market fit somewhere. And for people that aren't in startup world or don't know that, product market fit usually means that like you don't just have customers that are buying your product. You have customers that are telling other people about your product. And we looked for a long time to figure out who are the best prospects to go after. And we'll go into that later on. But we also realized that when we were sending out blast and doing things along the lines of like, oh, let's go after people because this is their title, not this is the company they work for, it changes the conversation. It also makes it harder to come up with some creative prospecting content because you're trying to force a round peg into a square hole. I think it might actually be the opposite that people say usually, but the account-based model works a lot better because if you're looking for the right person from that company, not only can you talk about, and we'll go into this in a second, but not only can you talk about prospecting that company and bring up content about that company, you can go to the individual and have both those things. And if you run into a jam where you can't find something about that person, you can fall back and bring up something in your email that you're doing about the company as a backup. I actually, one of the first things that I always tell people when they're asking me, how do you get double digit reply rates? I tell them, look, if you focus on actually talking about the person first, you're not selling to a company, you're selling to a human being that's just like you. And it's especially refreshing for me now because when I first got into prospecting 10 years ago, I was a young guy that was selling to people that were much older than me, that had been there for a long time and were used to just getting blitzed with phone calls and looking at white papers and all that stuff. At the end of the day, the new buyer is someone that's actually wants a good relationship with someone. They want to be able to shoot a text to someone if a something's not working in the product, or if they want to get better at something, or they're having some issues, and they want to have that personal relationship. So when you send a cold email, you should focus on pretending that when you're writing that cold email, you're actually going to be having more than one email exchange with the person. And I see all kinds of people that write terrible emails all the time. I actually literally filter bad emails now in my inbox. I have a whole collection of bad emails that I save for future webinars and things that I can do on that end to coach people on how to get better with their emails.
Very cool. I think one of the things that we always hear SDRs sort of stressing about is, well, you know, if I only have a small number of accounts, how do I keep it fresh? How do I not just send them the, you know, you can change up sort of the wording, but like, how do you keep it interesting when you only have such a small amount of companies to go after every month?
I love that you're saying this because it actually stems to my thinking of where the future of prospecting is going. As more and more companies are adopting doing the account-based model instead of just buying giant lead lists and trying to spew off and send the same pitch to everybody, the future of prospecting isn't just personalization. It's actually approaching each account like you're a marketing person, except instead of doing a marketing tactic for a group of people and hoping that maybe 5 or 6% of those will convert into an opportunity and then another 5 or 6% will convert into an actual closed one deal, what you can do instead is you can actually do this stuff specifically for those 40 accounts that you're trying to break into. And I'll give you a good example. At LeadIQ, we're a sales tool, obviously, that helps with dealing with optimizing, cutting down manual steps in prospecting, like finding account data, lead contact info, all that stuff. What we do is we'll go and do almost like a webinar type thing, except for one account. And we'll do specifics. A good example, one of the things I do is like, I'll go look at cold emails that someone writes and give you feedback on how to make your cold email better. Instead of just doing that and having 200 or 300 people sign up and then have our BDR team work those leads after and try and convert them into meetings, our BDR team will directly go email someone and say, hey, we want to show you LeadIQ, but we also want to be friends with you and understand how you guys prospect. Let's get you in a room and do a webinar for everybody on your sales team. And for us, we're a SaaS company, so we're selling to those seats. And all we ask for is 5 minutes to show them LeadIQ, and we'll give the other 55 minutes to them to go through their cold emails and give them something. And that's the big thing is like when you're doing account-based selling, you got to give more than take. And there's all kinds of cool things that you could do internally at your company. If you're a software company and you can do network measuring to see it, let's say you work in IT and your company makes a networking tool that will tell you how fast your website is, go run a report for them. Like go do some, get engineering to help you give them a tool or a nugget that you can give them and then talk about it with them on the first sales call and stuff. If you go in right away and just say, I'm going to go onto a sales call and just pitch them, you're kind of blowing all your bullets and you only have 30 or 40 accounts that you can focus on if you're doing the account-based model. So that's an example of like, how you can apply a marketing tactic, in this case, like a webinar, just for one prospect that you're trying to break into. And the cool part is, if it doesn't work for that one prospect, you're not a jerk. You can move on to someone else at a different department there, or someone else that's in your triangle of influence that can impact whether the deal happens or not, and work that person as well and tailor something else that fits what problems they have in their role at the company. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So it's kind of, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was just thinking, it might be, if we're talking about stuff, 40 accounts a month per rep, which again, makes sense. Maybe go over a snapshot of sort of an expected funnel for them. How many, you know, was, I don't know, how many of those webinars or group calls is one SDR or BDR here trying to do, and snapshot of what they're producing each month and what you expect them to do.
Yeah. So typically right now we try to shoot for around 15 opportunities in a month. What we usually see is that if, and this sounds really crazy when I give you these stats, but they're actually real, 80% of those meetings will actually turn into looking at our product and evaluating it after, because it, like with the rate my pitch tactic, at least. And a big reason for that is because I know it sounds bad, but people actually feel guilty and want to keep working with you if you help them. And I always joke about this when I give talks about prospecting. People hate saying no to people that they like. So if you do something to actually help someone, well, we usually can get around 15 to 20 opportunities, depending on the month, obviously. The other thing to keep in mind too is that while we're working 40 different accounts every month, we have a cascade from the previous month of people that get back to us as well. So it does actually add up, where like someone might say, hey, I want to talk and do the rate my pitch thing. They'll go and do it with us in January, and they might turn into an opportunity in February. And so as we've kind of built this account-based model out, which we kind of started around October, we've been able to see this cascade of the opportunities building up every month. And that's another way of thinking about it too, is it is long-winded, but at the end of the day, people hate saying no to someone that they like. So if you're trying to get that meeting and then also build a relationship, you already understand their sales team way better at this point than a rep would with an inbound lead that comes in. And that's kind of the way that we think about it.
Well, 15 opportunities a month. How do you define an opportunity?
So we actually sort of still hug kind of the BANT criteria, but we've moved away from, most people know BANT already, but it's budget, authority, need, and timeline.
Better to repeat it.
Yeah. What'd you say?
It's better to repeat it.
Yeah. For us, I'll tell you, I think that we are a little bit looser on BANT than we used to be, because sometimes the timeline is actually really long. We used to think that like, if it's not going to close in the next 2 quarters, we don't really want to count it as pipeline. We've kind of moved away from that model, because what it does is it gives an SDR almost a chance to not just get that meeting and move on from that, but that SDR can build a relationship with that person and then use that to break into other accounts as well. I'll give you a perfect example. Jim, who's on my team, we actually just moved Jim to start our customer success team here. But Jim, who was a BDR on my team, what would Jim would do is he built a really good relationship with this guy, Zach Barney, that works over at Team. And Zach's a big sales influencer and stuff. People know him everywhere.
He was the first episode on our podcast here.
Cool. Yeah. So
great dude.
Yeah. Awesome guy. Jim built up a relationship with Zach. And then we went through the process of talking with him. And what we were able to do actually is, when Zach wasn't ready to buy right away, because he was still figuring out some stuff and demoing other software, Jim had such a good relationship with Zach that he actually can use him for introductions to other people. And it's because Jim was selfless with the way that he approached his prospecting with Zach. He didn't just reach out to him and send him the same message and put him through the same experience. Instead, he was able to say, hey, let's help you out. Let's talk about some of these things. Let's figure out all this stuff. We do a call with him. We understand how his sales team works. And even if they're not ready to bind, that timeline's a little loose. It eventually turned into a closed one deal for us, because we stretched out that timeline and we were okay with not rushing it. And I'm not saying that there can't be urgency, because I understand that people have numbers that they have to meet and stuff. But you got to keep in mind that your prospect doesn't give a shit about your timeline. They really don't. And a lot of deals are lost by people offering end of the month discounts and trying to rush someone. Like, you could have a deal size that might get marked down 20 or 30% because you're trying to push them into Q3. And I get that the urgency is there and you want to grow, but I'd rather take the 20 or 30% more revenue a month later. Like, especially as a startup for us, you know, it matters way more to us than actually just trying to rush someone into doing something that they might not be completely comfortable with yet.
Cool. I like it.
Yeah, I hope I'm not all over the place on some of this stuff, but like the qualification thing, I think is more of a, I know a lot of companies that have literally fields in Salesforce where you have to fill out BAN. And I actually don't think that that's a good idea because it's kind of, so when I did prospecting at Dyn, for example, one of the things that Dyn used to say is like, we didn't prospect porn sites because at the time porn sites were DDoSed a lot. And for people that don't know, Dyn was like a back-end server infrastructure thing that like, if it ever got attacked by hackers and stuff, it would hurt and impact performance for all of our customers. So we were discouraged to ever go after porn sites. And one of the things that we used to say is when you see porn, you know what it is. Like, because there's some things that you'd see, like you might see a chat app where you're like, oh, I don't know if that's porn or not. It's one of those things where like, if you know it's porn and you shouldn't be on it at work, don't go and prospect that person. It's the same thing with kind of banting stuff too. Like, if you know that this person's actually interested and wants to take a look, your best shot anyway, and you want to build the relationship up, is to just get them on the horn and talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to
point is that, you know, every business is a bit different, and a lot of what you got to find out is what time frames make sense for you. And you're right, you know, for some products and some people, honestly, there's some people have way longer evaluation and sales cycles. So you never really know until you see stuff either close or not close, and you don't know what that is. Like, you have to go through a whole sales cycle to see what that is, and if it's not a company to say, hey, we have 4-month sales cycles because it's all inbound. You start doing outbound, it might be more of like an 8-month sales cycle. So it can take a year or 18 months to sort of get that confidence in how long this stuff takes to actually close. Like, what's the appropriate type of, like, how do you know if it's too far out or not, in a way?
Yeah, I mean, like, the other thing is if we get in touch with someone and their first response is like, oh, I have a contract with X vendor, reach back out to me in Q3, you obviously aren't going to, like, you can try and foster that relationship all you want, but like, we're not going to go make that an op, obviously. I mean, there are some limitations on that stuff. But I've actually never really been an expert in closing. I've mainly been good at like opening doors and kind of figuring out that stuff. And I'll tell you one thing though, I used to sit in on a lot of sales reps that would close deals and they'd get further along in the process. And we actually keep our BDRs involved in some of these deals because we want to keep that relationship built so they can get referrals. It's not a bad feather to have in your cap when you're trying to figure out one of the ways that you can, if you're only reaching out to 40 accounts and you're writing an email and the person's not responding, you can then go to your referral network and ask for an introduction. Like, hey, I'm trying to break into this account. And the cool part is this person's like, oh, I know this person. I've been on a bunch of calls with them when I've been going through the LeadIQ buying process. Even if they're not a current customer, they'll still do a referral and help you out because you've been helping them out. And that's sort of, I think a lot of these teams that go out there, they really compartmentalize the BDR team. I'm not saying that like they sell or close, they don't at all, but it doesn't hurt for them to be CC'd on emails and stay involved in the conversation somewhere. And when there's a cool marketing tactic coming up, be like, hey, I just want to let you know this thing's happening. Maybe it'll help your team out. Like, kind of letting them be the champion that connects sales and marketing together as well.
Yeah. So I asked you a quick follow-up question. When you are hiring, your new hire, do they, I don't know, out of school? How much experience? So they don't have sales experience, like you said, but do they have any experience, or you want like really truly raw, like 0 to 1 year out of college?
So the people that I have on my team right now are a little bit, we actually tried to hire some people out of college, but the problem was we were hiring kind of middle of the year. And so for this last cycle of BDRs that we hired, we actually kind of went through the process of kind of having them simulate prospecting us. So I asked them to basically download a trial of LeadIQ, go through the process. The people that I tapped into for this, one person was recruited. The other two people that we hired came in from inbound interest from us. I actually had them go and write a cold email to us pitching LeadIQ. And then I went through the process of writing their cold email And if after I rated them, I asked them to rewrite it. And in doing so, I would measure how much they improved based on the rewrite. And if it shows that it's easy to coach them, it actually was a pretty cool thing for us to get a good idea. Yeah, this person's trainable. I'll tell you one thing. No one grows up and says, I want to work in sales. It kind of accidentally happens to everyone. Almost everyone, anyway. And so I really like trying to hire people.
It's not like the firefighter, you know, there's like, you know, when you're a kid, there's just firefighters and policemen and like sales.
Yeah.
That's not cool.
Yeah. I think very rarely do you run into someone that wants to work in sales. Like usually you want to do like marketing or you want to do something in business, but you don't know. The guys that we tapped into here to hire, one guy was an IT guy before who lived in Seattle, for example, and he was moving out here, moving back home. And we were able to kind of tap into him. And the way I measured it is I asked him about some things that he does that are creative. I wanted to see some things that show that they're creative people and receptive to new ideas. Jim, for example, he's a really talented bassist. He plays bass. He loves writing. He's like, we kind of measured him on like, how is he as a writer? Is he funny? Does he have personality? And those things are really important for us. There are some things that you do lose as you kind of, if you just like focus your hiring on like just creative people, you want to measure still that they got hustle in their step too. But that's a thing I'd tap into. When I ask people when we were interviewing them, I say, tell me about what you do outside of work. Like, do you play any instruments? Do you write? What do you like for movies, TV shows, music? How do you relate to people? Are you cultured? Do you listen to a lot of things? Do you like, I know that sounds kind of dumb, but that stuff actually matters a lot to me because it kind of helps me gauge how much they can relate to people based on random things that they like. We frequently will prospect an account, one of our 40 accounts, we'll prospect them and say like, hey, I noticed that you like Drew on my team, for example, loves hockey. And on Fridays, he'll go build a list of buyers that he wants to sell to. You like hockey, I assume, with the fist bump. He'll go and target people that just like hockey. And he'll write them cold emails. And he'll just go dig up things that he noticed and bookmarked and cool highlights and stuff. And he'll email this to people, be like, hey, blah, blah, blah. Not sure if you like hockey. He never says that he stalked this person, but he knows he'll go look for them and find out if they like hockey. Make his content about hockey, just hoping that the person's like, hey, I like hockey. How'd you know that? And, you know, he doesn't ever answer that, but he knows they like hockey. He looked at their Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn stuff. He saw if they had ever posted anything, if they liked a team on Facebook, if they put that in there, if they have that stuff that's public. And anyway, he'll dedicate time matching up his interest with those people to get better reply rates. And Friday is one of his best days because he does all hockey stuff on Fridays.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it makes it easier because he doesn't have to go dig up and refine the same content. He can actually reuse a lot of this stuff the same. Like, he'll go look at a bunch of people on the sales team because we sell the sales teams. He'll go dig up and see if he can find anyone that's on that team that might actually like hockey. He'll look on Facebook. If he does, like, it might not even be the best buyer, and he'll still go after the hockey person knowing that they'll give him an introduction if he can be their friend and relate to them.
So what kind of stuff? What kind of hockey? Like, I'm curious because I obviously want to see these links now.
Colin's a hockey fan.
I wish I should have prepared this and had it in the presentation, but he'll go find a top 10 hockey highlight. Or if he sees that someone likes, he knows hockey well enough where like, I like this for like NFL stuff. Like, I love football and stuff. I'm a Patriots season ticket holder. But for Drew, he'll go see that someone likes the Pittsburgh Penguins and he knows that my hockey knowledge is weak, but like, he knows that like this guy did some really cool stuff for them. I know Sidney Crosby's on there, for example, but like, he might go find a highlight of the top plays that he's ever done and write an email to someone and be like, hey, blah, blah, blah. We helped make, notice that this Sidney Crosby clip might be cool for you because I saw you're from Pittsburgh originally. Even though like, he knows that person likes that hockey team, and then he'll find a way to relate it back to Lead IQ somehow in his content and ask for a meeting. And it's super, I'm like really proud of him that he's been able to figure this out and do it this quickly. If you can find some stuff that you can do that can link to someone based on pop culture stuff, people want to be friends with you no matter what. I mean, think about the relationships that we get in our life all the time. I remember sophomore year of high school, I was in a biology class and this guy next to me, his name was Josh Payne, sat next to me. And he said, "The day is mine," in a Sean Connery voice, referencing the Sean Connery skit
Sean that Connery. Was
Celebrity Jeopardy SNL. On SNL. Yeah. And I loved those clips when I was in high school. And I remember being like, "Hey, I loved that clip." And we became friends. The guy was at, like, the guy went to my wedding and stuff last week. We became friends connecting on some common interests. It's the same thing in sales. You can kind of form that relationship, especially when you're spending more of your time researching because you're not going after hundreds of accounts a month. Those 40 accounts make it so that you can take that bandwidth and really dig deep on these people that you're prospecting.
So when you break down this, like, this act of digging deep, how do you see what is that split there? Is it all sort of the research? Is it all finding the content, building the campaigns, or building the messaging for them? How do you reps sort of see that?
Yeah. So one of the things that we kind of rotate through, and this is something we've actually been kind of trialing and erroring, like right now a little bit too, is we will get a reply, but sometimes we have to match up value props with someone. So typically, like if we're doing we use SalesLoft internally here for our prospecting. We're doing our first touch point, it might be that customized email. Let's say it's a hockey thing and you bring up Mark Messier and you're a Rangers fan or something. He played there, right? I remember NHL 97, so I'm hoping I'm right.
95 was the best though.
Oh, okay. I had 97 for like PC or something. So I used to play it on my brother, but,
gotcha.
I let's say he makes a Mark Messier highlight video, sends an email to someone and says, "Hey, Dave, saw you like Mark Messier or saw you like the Rangers. This clip is really awesome. Gets me pumped. Hope it gets you pumped to do some sales on Friday. Was curious if we could talk." He might bring up one value prop about Lead IQ and then save the rest. And then in the second email that he sends, which he'll do 4 or 5 days later, he'll have an email that goes out that he actually writes right away. And it's a customized email, and he'll just write it right away and say, "Hey, blah, blah, blah. Hey, Dave, I sent you an email about Mark Messier. Not sure if you watched it. Was curious if this is something that could help you out." And what he'll do is he'll actually rotate through his different value props. A lot of these people, they write cold emails and they put these bullets in their emails and they list off all their bullets. What you're really doing is you're using all your bullets up so that when you get on that first sales call and you have to overturn an objection, you don't really have a way to overturn an objection because you already blew all your bullets in an email. You end up going up, you go into a call with no bullets, and everybody's been there, I'm sure, that's listening to this podcast, where like you get on a call and like they give you an objection. You're like, "Crap, I can't say this because I already said this." You can actually avoid that if you just like pay attention to the email they actually responded on based on the features. So like I might write an email about how Lead IQ will tell you who's already in Salesforce before you reach out to someone. And then if that didn't resonate and get a reply, I might do my next email and say, "Hey, blah, 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 sent you this Mark Messier email. Noticed that you didn't get back to me yet. Was curious if you guys are using Outreach. Have you ever thought about sending leads right into Outreach with Lead IQ? What are your thoughts on talking?" Like just something really simple like that. And we actually will rotate through these different value props. And the cool part is you get buying signs by not blowing them all at once. You know which thing actually tickled their interest and what to lead with on your first call.
That's cool. So you can see which one you're basically just like looking for which ones they had the best engagement or like responded to, and then building the rest of your sort of sales narrative off of that.
Yeah. And you could tailor it. In a lot of ways, it's almost like how inbound marketing apps and stuff that people use will tell you what web pages someone looked at. You just look at what email engaged them the most. My favorite part about all these email tools now, because like when I did prospecting, when I got out of college, they didn't have all these tools and all these different things in the sales stack. I remember when one of my favorite features is just being able to see an email being opened 100 times because you see that and you either know that they're forwarding it around or they're reopening the email because they're interested or something caught their interest in there. And that's actually for the orgs that have trouble getting good response rates and they combo in cold calling. That's the best time to cold call, is when you see those 100 opens happening at once.
I know some people that built their whole outbound calling based on like seeing the number of openings. It was like that would get filtered right to the very top if these are the people you talk to right now.
Yeah, I think it's a really good idea too, because if you're getting the detection that the email's open and you call them, you don't really have to go talk about your product on the first email. You can talk about your, like, a perfect example, we were prospecting this account and they were based in New York. I don't want to say the company because I don't want to tell our competitors that we're working with this company and they're trying. I don't want them to go after it too. But Drew actually wrote a really awesome email about. He like mentioned Green Man from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and he likes It's Always Sunny. This prospect liked It's Always Sunny, and Drew actually owns a Green Man suit. So Drew took a picture of him like Green Manning while looking at this guy's website, plopped it in the middle of an email and said, like, and then brought it back. One of the things that's really important is not just doing this. You have to transition into your product somehow, like figure out a way to say that stuff and still spin it into how it helps your product. I forget how he did it with this, but he ended up making a couple of references and the guy opened the email a ton and Drew ended up calling the guy right away. And instead of Drew calling the guy and saying, hey, blah, 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 do you have a couple minutes to talk? I want to talk about my product, how it can help you with XYZ, which is like the normal talk off that you might see on a cold call. Drew instead called and said, hey, blah, 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 I want to see if you want to get some milk steaks, which is referencing something in It's Always Sunny. And the guy just starts laughing and says, is this Drew? And he knew who it was right away on the call. I loved it because it was actually one of the first ops that he brought in when he first joined. So I was like really excited and I actually got so pumped up, I ruined one of our folding chairs in the office because I was like, yes. And I like stood up on it jumping all excited and bent it and I almost fell. But I got really jacked up about it because he was doing the thing that we talk about, which is like almost doing micro marketing for one person, making tailoring content. The advantage that sales has over marketing is that you're not pigeonholed and being stuck trying to make something that applies to 500 people or 1,000 people or 10,000 people. You're doing it for one person and one account. So you can do all kinds of cool stuff like that and kind of just customize it so that the person has a personal experience. It's the same exact thing that people are doing with ad networks now too. Like they'll go and like dump all their marketing budget into targeting a group set that isn't just, let's say you target CTOs. You're not just going to go take an ad set, upload a list of people that are CTOs. You might make your content that makes a pop culture reference to someone and they can now segment off that stuff with ad tech. You can do that in sales even better and more granular. Just go stalk the person on Facebook. Go see what pages they've liked before. See if they have a Twitter account where they've posted or talked about anything that's happened in pop culture. Look for them online. A lot of people have personal websites now, especially buyers. Like the people that have buying power at companies usually have a brand for themselves too. I remember when I worked at Dyn, everyone that was in senior leadership pretty much had their own website, their own brand. They had different things that they'd done talks about before. Kyle York, who taught me a lot of the stuff that I know about prospecting, he like loves Barry Sanders. And if you ever wanted to go prospect Kyle and you're listening to this right now, the right thing to do would be to like go send Kyle a Barry Sanders jersey or send him a highlight reel. I bet you'd get a response from Kyle if you did something like that. So like, it doesn't have to just be sports stuff too. There's all kinds of interests that people like. Maybe you have some band that you like. Maybe you just do something that entertains a prospect and makes them want to respond to you because you're fun and you're interesting.
And you're not a guy to shy away from doing that yourself. I scrounged the internet and I found maybe a couple of videos of you, you know, in a 80s, was it 80s hair band, and you're actually serenading one of your customers.
Yeah, I've done some crazy stuff. Like I actually wrote a blog about this. Unfortunately, I didn't put the blog up in time for this, but we have a blog.
It. We'll put it in the show notes here.
Okay, cool. We have a blog post that we're having go out about how we booked 56% of our meetings last year. And this was a true, you'll like this, Aaron, because it was truly an account-based thing that we did. Yep. We dug up and looked, I handpicked 20 accounts for the month of May last year that I really wanted to break into. And I made this list. The criteria for me was I wanted someone that had at least 5 SDRs, they were using Salesforce, and I'd go look for intel on that stuff too. I'd look for SDRs, see if they were using Salesforce. And what I did is I went and looked up their website, looked up information about these people, and I grabbed my piano and a webcam, and I just really quickly in Google Drive would write out 6 or 7 really quick lyrics, like really quick lines about these companies, and I sang them. I'm not a good singer, by the way. It's funny because our CEO loves that I did this, and she like promoted it. It was actually on This Week in Startups with like Jason Calacanis, and I was like, I kind of don't want all these people to sing because I'm not a good singer. But the thing is, that didn't matter. All I did is I used my creative talent of playing piano and songwriting and quickly made these little jams for people about them and their company. And the crazy part is I think I ended up doing, I forget how many I ended up doing it for, but I have it in the blog post written out, but we did roughly around, I think 15 to 20 accounts. And I ended up actually booking about, I think we ended up booking 50 something percent of them into meetings, actually, with people writing back, this is awesome. They forwarded it to their whole sales team. This is the best sales email I've ever gotten before. And that was one thing that I did. This was when it was just me and I was doing marketing stuff and sales stuff at the same time. Mm-hmm. So like you can do creative talents. If you're a salesperson and you're trying to think of different ways to break into your prospects, go think of talents that you have and do those talents. There was this one guy that used to work with me at a company. I worked in a medical startup and they knew magic tricks. And they used to just record themselves with a webcam doing magic tricks and sending it to prospects. When I told them this, I was like, hey, do this, try this out. They actually got one of them actually did this and recorded it and sent it to a journalist, and the journalist ended up writing a story on her startup. So like you can do all this stuff to basically try and get your name out there. And that's a real thing that like, that a lot of people are afraid to try, I think sometimes. Anyway, I think that like, look at it like this. Both of you guys probably have talents too that you did prior to getting involved in the sales world, right?
No, talentless entirely over here.
Aaron, you're muted, by the way.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, no. Well, at least you got hockey and he plays guitar. He's music, hockey.
I noticed on his Google Plus profile that he had a guitar holding thing. So I was like, oh, interesting. Like, grab your guitar and go write some, like, pick 20 accounts that are really important to you for that month. And yeah, it might take 2 days, but you're going to get the same amount of opportunities you would if you were handwriting emails to them.
I think though that picture was from when he was like 17.
So last week.
It wasn't that long ago, like 5 years ago.
Aaron, what do you have for talents that you could possibly do when you're doing sales and stuff?
One thing I'm known for, and I started this when I was late 30s, was drawing, you know, like pictures, awesome, and sketches. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the guys...
The cover, Predictable Revenue. I mean, all the art and Predictable Revenue in the new book, From Impossible to Inevitable, is stuff I did myself.
I didn't know that. That's awesome. Yeah, like...
I don't do that much anymore, though, so, because, you know, it's one of these things where, especially with a big family, 11 kids and businesses, I find that I sort of can do some art, but it's just harder when I don't have that space to... You know, sort of sit and have ideas. It's always under the gun, like every day, all the time.
Yeah, like look at it. Like one of the guys on my team, John Mazza, he actually wrote. He's now in AE. We just moved him from sale from prospecting to AE because he was ready. He just had it ready. He got hired to do that originally. He was making comics for prospects. He did that one Friday, and he actually reused some of the same comics, but would just change the company name out in the comic. I think he got like around a 25 to 30% response rate doing that. It was pretty good. The other thing that I think a lot of people underrate with the account-based model when you're prospecting is sometimes you're not going after the right person. So if you get like, when we get a rejection from someone from an account, we actually will rotate to a different role at the company, usually on the account-based model. And it might seem kind of obvious, but a lot of people don't do that. They get the objection and move on to the next account, which I don't think is the right thing to do. And in this case, he actually did this for the comic. They turned him down. He remade the comic, but for a different prospect, using a different comic at the same company, and ended up turning it into an opportunity afterward. I just think it's sort of an interesting thing that a lot of people don't focus on.
Well, I think it's really, I like the amount of like focus you're bringing towards helping people use their creativity and talents to this. I think, I mean, I've seen people do it in small ways, but you're probably the person who's talked about it where it's like a big priority and it's like a big focus. People have been successful in you know, finding their own, you know, they're maybe across more people, the team. So I find is you have a team of 10 people, everyone talks about social selling, you know, maybe like 1 out of 10 people is like very good at it because it's just, you need to have some style and a voice, and a lot of people haven't found theirs yet.
Yeah, one thing, I do a talk sometimes at a couple of sales events and stuff. I've done this a couple of times where I talk about how we get double-digit reply rates. Now, one of the questions that people always ask me personally after, they'll come up to me and say, hey, Ryan, these examples are really cool. I feel like I'm not that creative yet. Like, I haven't figured out some stuff. And one thing that I kind of tell people when they first start is to, if you're going to start diving into doing some creative stuff with your prospecting, it might not be a bad idea for you to actually write your cold emails in the voice of a fictional character and just put your name at the end. And I'll give you a good example. I remember I was having a really bad month prospecting once when I worked at Dyn. It was like July when everyone was on vacation. And I was all discouraged because I kept getting out of office replies. And I'm like, man, I'm just not thinking creatively today. You know, you just have days where you don't think well. You know what I mean? People have that. And so I, for a week, wrote all of my emails in the voice of Wayne Campbell from Wayne's World. And like, I know it's kind of like a little weird, but like I'd make like little jokes at myself. I did the self-deprecating thing. I would bring up things that Wayne Campbell would bring up, like some of the bands and, you know, things that like, I usually stayed away from like the swing and the girl stuff, cause that's kind of not safe for work. But like, you know, you want to make sure you keep it professional and still safe for work. But I'd write these emails in this voice, and it actually got me through a pretty bad rut where I wasn't thinking of creative stuff. If you're trying to find your voice, do something like that. Think of a fictional character that is ridiculous that you enjoy and write some stuff like that. If you like Seinfeld, maybe you write stuff in Jerry Seinfeld's voice or George's voice. If you like Liz Lemon from 30 Rock, write your emails in Liz Lemon's voice a little bit. Like, talk about how you use a chip clip to keep your hair up, or so, if you're a woman listening to this or something, or you have long hair. Like, you can do all kinds of this cool stuff to get out of that creative rut sometimes. And we do that a lot here, actually, because there are days where, like, you'll just look at a prospect and they'll be terribly boring. Like, you can't find anything to, you got no angle, and you're like, man, how am I going to get this person to respond? I got to reach out to this person all month because they're one of my 30 or one of my 40 that I'm going after this month. And that's kind of a cool way you can work around it a little bit. I think a lot of people are afraid to go put themselves out there because they're afraid to fail. But if you can channel something that's already been successful, such as a Wayne Campbell or just anything that, that someone actually likes, you can have some success with it.
Excellent.
Nice. Zang. We were all thinking it. Someone had to do it.
Totally. It's like, that was my restrained response.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. So I know you know, we're sort of at the, we want to take a couple more minutes here. I know you've got a presentation with some examples that have worked for you in the past. Do you want to maybe, let's take a couple minutes. You can walk us through a couple of your favorites.
Yeah, sure.
We haven't touched on today.
Should I screenshot, or do you guys want to just share the screenshots after the podcast?
Just screen share.
Okay, let me try and full screen this. I'll give you a good example. So I always talk about this a little bit, but oh crap!
Just hide all of those. Yeah, that you're not allowed to prospect to it.
By the way, Ryan, while you pull this up, when going back to the question around like talents and things,
yeah,
obviously, like rather than talents, there's like topics. You know, human interest topics, and clearly like kids and family is one that already is very present in my stuff. It's not just creativity, but sort of human interest topics. This might be anything about that.
But anyway,
stuff that can connect with other people.
Yeah. So I'll show you an example that I like using in talks because it shows doing something that's really scrappy and easy. You guys can see my screen, right? So this was an email I wrote to a guy named Dave, who was the CEO of a startup that was really hot at the time when I worked at Dyn, and they had a lot of internet traffic. And Dyn actually used to do their pricing based on internet traffic. So getting a big account like this was really useful for us. I wrote this email to Dave. This is when I lived in my mom's house. I was working from home one day. I said, hey, Dave, I didn't realize this until today, but apparently we're both square rim glasses bros. See attached. And I sent this attachment of me and my mom. Hold on, let me make sure it works. I sent this attachment of me and my mom's bathroom, actually. It's really pathetic. But like, you know, I look how young I was. Wow. This is like a long time ago.
Was that like last week?
No, I've aged a lot, actually.
You look long. You look like you're 12 there.
I know. I'm going to have some apple slices and sippy cups after.
I think you and young Colin just start a band or something.
All right. So... see attached. We understand and respect the importance of structural integrity when it comes to glasses frames. We also happen to be some of the sharpest looking guys online. Score 2 for us. -1 point for me taking a MySpace pic of myself. By the way, MySpace was a competitor of Dave's company. That's why I mentioned MySpace in 2009. Don't think I'm lame. I know no that judgment. I was
yeah, too late.
I know.
Too late.
I'm being judged. I know that that was completely off topic and random, but I wanted to ask you something about email delivery. Oh, I didn't block out the company. It was Path, by the way. How is Path sending out emails, and has delivery been a pain at all? I'm not sure how closely you still follow what we're up to, but we're now doing some pretty cool things to help get newsletters, transactional, and bulk emails delivered. Figured maybe your team would want to see what we're doing. Do you think anyone would want to talk with us about email delivery stuff? What are your thoughts? I didn't go into pushing about the product. I just sent that attachment, and I talked about our glasses mainly. And Dave just wrote back, "Hey, Ryan, we may be interested in your email delivery stuff. Thanks for the persistence. What's the best way to evaluate?" And he added square rim glasses, bro, to his signature in his email. I took a picture of him, by the way, for reference.
Yeah.
But like, this is just like a really cool way of showing how you can you know, connect with someone and entertain them with content and not talk about your product the whole time. And, you know, I matched my audience a little bit by researching Dave and seeing that he was actually a really cool guy. But I always wonder, by the way, like when I did this talk a long time ago, I used to block out his name. I hope he's not weird that I'm using him in an email now. but I think a lot of people get into this. I'm going to try and find another example too. These are some bad emails. Here's one that I'll show you. That's an example where you don't have to always be funny. This is one that Jim wrote at LeadIQ. Before I show the email, I want to talk about it for a second. Do you guys know what patent trolls are?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So there's this whole phenomenon for people that don't know listening to the podcast, where these people will go look at startups that are up and coming, and they'll actually go buy, they'll go and like patent something with it before a startup can, so that the startup has to pay that person money afterward to use their idea. And it's a big problem. And Jim at the time was prospecting someone who wrote a blog post about patent trolls. This person wrote a blog post not related to their company at all, had nothing to do with it. He wrote, "Hey, Mike, just finished reading that interview you wrote up with Josh Becker talking about patent lawsuits and wanted to drop you the line."
I actually know him, funny enough.
Oh, you know this guy?
Josh Becker. Anyway, whatever.
Oh, okay. At my last job, I once went on this whole rant against intellectual ventures, the notorious patent troll, only to have the guy next to me say at the end of it, "My wife's a senior director there." Awkward, haha. So anyway, I heard that Lex Machina had used SalesLoft at one point or another. Was curious if you guys missed the prospect tool they used to have. The reason I mentioned it is because we actually... Anyway, you get the idea. Jim led with talking and relating to this guy about patent trolls. He made a little bit of the content about LeadIQ and asked for a meeting. And the guy wrote back. I don't need to show his response, but he basically wrote something really nice about it and ended up talking with him. He gave him an objection and then said he'd still talk to us, and it turned into an opportunity. So... I think that's kind of a good way of showing like there's other things you can do. Let me see if I can find, I'm kind of just blasting through these really quick. This is a good one that I wrote too. I just made something really easy in Excel. I wrote, "Hey Adam, I just want to say two things. First, you guys are awesome. I attached a diagram that accurately reflects our collective awesomeness because I'm lame. Second, I was going to ask you from a business standpoint, have you guys ever thought about sending emails highlighting the best ways to ruin your fan base's wallets? It's lame for me to ask because we do email delivery stuff, but I figured it may not be a bad idea to get users re-engaged." And I made this little crappy pie graph in Excel. It just this level of awesomeness, and it was us and everyone else. And by the way, this is before ad agencies were overusing the word awesome. This is like in 2009, where we're still legit and stuff. And he just wrote back, "Well, your chart we use," and I blocked out the name, but we send newsletters every Monday. Turns out this guy was actually sending newsletters to people, 3 million people every week. And I was one of his customers, and I wasn't getting the newsletter because it wasn't getting delivered. And Dyne actually sells those newsletters. And I they sell the service that lets you deliver it. And I was able to do that stuff. Hey, how do videos work in this thing? Can I do video or will it mess up?
You can do video, but we won't get the audio.
Oh, okay. I'm going to share a video with you guys afterward. And it's something I did where I sent we did this campaign at Dyne. I talked about this a little bit with you, Colin, early. Where we sent music videos to 6 key accounts that we wanted to break into. And we had 7 reps at the time. And I went to all 7 reps and said, "If you could have one dream account, who would you go after?" And each of them gave me one. One person didn't respond, which was their loss. And in the campaign that we did, we made these customized music videos that were basically ads for these accounts we're breaking into. One was careerbuilder.com, one was Living Social, One was Hulu. Another one was Posterous, Expedia. Which got a, what'd you say?
Expedia.
Expedia was one of them. Why, you saw the video or something?
Yes, I found that one. That was good.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we'll share. Expedia is the only one that never got back to us, by the way. But we ended up getting 83% booking rate with meetings for them. And it was just because we customized and did a marketing tactic for these accounts. The cool part is we closed Living Social off of it, which paid for the whole campaign in itself. And the Hulu CEO actually forwarded my campaign an email to a bunch of press, and then Fortune Magazine wrote about it. Like,
no
you
way.
Can do a lot. Yeah, you can, like, and this was just us taking the time that we're focusing on how do we break into these accounts and approach it almost like a marketer instead of a prospector. I think the future of prospecting is going to actually be built around the account-based model, and you'll take the beginning of your month and sit around in a room. It's going to be like you're in the writer's room at Saturday Night Live in the 80s and 90s and when they were actually good. And you'd be like, you're going to think of like, what are we going to do this week to break into these accounts? What can I actually do that make this person feel like they're loved and entertained? How do I show that I care about this person? And the cool part is some companies are going to start adopting and doing this, and they're going to get great response rates, and they're not going to get unsubscribes because they're not blasting hundreds of people at once. They're not going to have to do cold calling all the time. They're going to do cold calling to follow up on the thing that they did instead of cold calling, following up about your product, which is kind of selfish. If you cold call someone and you follow up and say, hey, did you watch that music video that I got or that I made for you? Or did you look at the song that I sent you? You're going to get a pretty good response rate. You're not going to get a lot of people that are like, yeah, that was creepy. Why are you contacting me? And if they do that stuff and say that stuff, you can joke it off and make fun of yourself. Like, all you have to do is kind of focus on tailoring content around the person you're trying to prospect. I know a lot of sales leaders hear this stuff and they say, it won't scale. I'm Oracle. I have 1,300 reps. I can't possibly do this. The thing is, you can try and experiment with a small team. Do once a month if you're feeling nervous about it and you're on an enterprise team and you're bigger, do an off roadmap day on Friday. Like, take a Friday once a month and say, hey, I want everyone to do prospecting today. Spend your day, instead of doing a call blitz, spend your day doing a creative prospecting campaign for your accounts. And you'll start seeing results, and then you can start evolving that idea further and further.
I'm taking notes, man. This is awesome.
Oh, cool. And that makes me excited. Yeah, I love this stuff because, like, I remember when I got out of college, I was like, man, I really just want to work in marketing. But I graduated school and it was like post 2008 financial crisis. All these people were taking the jobs that I could have got for entry level stuff because they were getting laid off in their senior jobs and taking anything they could get. And I remember thinking, man, if I could figure out a way to break into marketing, what can I do? And I happened to intern at Dyn before when they only had 20 people. And when I left, there were like 300 people there. But the interesting part, and I know they had a lot of stuff and their sales team was really complicated and everything, but I managed to use prospecting as my way of getting into marketing. And I approached prospecting as a marketer. I didn't approach it like a salesperson. And you can do that. I think salespeople can do it too. If you're an AE or you're a director of sales, you can still approach this stuff. No one's ever going to be offended that you treated them like a human being because you're not selling to a machine, you're selling to a human. Even in the enterprise too. I sent the craziest crap to UPS once. I wrote a really zany, wacky email to UPS and got a meeting there. And they're a Fortune 50 company. I did the same thing for, I got us a meeting with the NFL when I worked at Dyn. They're a huge, I still remember the email. I wrote this email to this guy named Bruce Bledsdale. I still remember his name because he's connected with me on LinkedIn and stuff. And he worked at the NFL. And he worked at Playboy before he worked at the NFL. And I remember being like I remember I wrote an email to him and I completely referenced everything. I was like completely blown away that this guy jumped from Playboy to the NFL. I was like, that's such a random jump. And I wrote an email just asking him and building a relationship, being like, hey, did you ever go to the mansion? What was that like? Like, what was your life like that? And I'm not like some weird bro guy. Like, I don't care about that stuff. But I was generally interested in this guy and his interesting background. I didn't sell to him saying, hey, I'm a Patriots season ticket holder. I love the NFL. Please buy my stuff. Like, I didn't go into it like that. Instead, I was like, hey, saw you worked here. Wanted to know what that was like. I'm working on a cool DNS thing we should talk about at some point. But we ended up getting a meeting with him. And I remember Kyle and I were all in the room and the guy kept calling the NFL the league and we all felt so badass every time he said that. But like, I didn't write a traditional prospecting email to this guy and I still got a meeting with him. It scales up to big companies. I think there's this big stigma like, oh, I can't do that. It's a big company. And that's bullshit. You know, like you can do it with big companies.
That's awesome.
Sorry, I get fired up a little bit.
Oh, man. You can tell. It really comes out that that you're super passionate about this.
Yeah.
So this I want to be cognizant of our time because there's been some awesome content here. I want to make sure people don't miss that blog post that you're going to put out. So that's coming out next week.
Yeah.
Are listening to this is actually like 5 weeks ago. So I'll make sure we've got that in the show notes here.
I'll post the link that has an example of the piano prospecting campaign that we talked about in this.
Yep.
I'll put together a blog post between now and then about the video campaign that we did at Dyn also. Cool. I do that usually as a webinar, but we can do it for this or something and talk about it there. The last thing I was going to say is that I am going to be writing a book for LeadIQ about double digit reply rates. We're going to make it free when we finish it. So hopefully that will be done by then. It'll hopefully be edited and completely made and posted. It's a difficult task to do actually to write a book from scratch, as you guys probably know too. But we'll get there and hopefully it'll be ready by then. If I say it on this podcast, it makes a deadline for me, which is good.
I'm going to put the link to Ryan's awesome double digit response rate ebook at the bottom of the show notes. And if not, I'll pre-populate like a mail to that says like you click it and it'll be like disappointed. Dear Ryan.
Do you know about my disappointed unsubscribe?
No.
Oh my gosh. Oh, it's the best thing. So there is this clip online. Anyone that's listening should do this because I don't think we need to link it here, but there's an old clip from that TV show Hercules where Kevin Sarbo reads his stage direction out loud. He goes, wait a minute. This isn't my planet. Disappointed, and he literally yells the word disappointed when it was clearly in parentheses in his line to like say it like you're disappointed.
Yeah.
And there's a video of it, and I actually in my prospecting emails that we send, I put in my email signature. Like, think about it from this perspective: you can create an impression with somebody with everything, not just the body of your email, but even the signature, the unsubscribe. You want to create an experience for someone where it feels delightful and wonderful. In mine, I'll say, this email disappointed me, unsubscribe. And I link disappointed to that video. So anyone that gets that, I have another guy on my team who says this email, like his unsubscribe, it says, this email wasn't as good as every grunt Michael Jackson's ever done. Click here to unsubscribe. And if you click it, there's a YouTube video someone edited that just has all the Michael Jackson sounds from all his songs without anything else. So it's like him going, woo, and like, it's crazy. But like, he gets people that the interesting part is he'll see people in his link tracking that will click in and click that link and then not unsubscribe. So like there's little things like that that you want to think about when you're going through the impression of how to get someone to warm up to you. It's all about being thoughtful.
I think that's a great place to leave it here today, Ryan. So we'll make sure we get all those links. We'll put them in the show notes. This is going to be some large show notes, and we'll definitely have a couple blog posts coming out together. So if you're listening, make sure you check out our blog, and we'll link to Ryan's blog so you can find all this great content there.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Ryan. Guys. I really appreciate it. And I'm really looking forward to listening to this podcast because you guys know some of the best people out there. I have a feeling that I think if I had to say one thing that really I just want everyone to think about this for a second is a last note. When you write an email, ask yourself, if someone posted this on social media, would I be proud of it? And if that answer is no, don't send that email. Make it better. That's it.
Beautiful. Or should I say, excellent.
All right. Yeah, never.